Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, we thank you for you giving us that wonderful disclaimer, and we thank you for all the time and effort you've spent with us. We appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're now on Lesson 10, which is the conclusion of the lessons that we've had, and we will also begin talking tonight about the 14th Amendment. Just to recap, your first lesson was, I was born a first-class citizen. What the hell happened? Number two, the big picture, the 30,000-foot view. Number three was how Congress converts state citizens into federal citizens. And then the fourth was the origins of the federal citizen. The fifth was how state citizens are converted, actually, into federal citizens, how it's done. Sixth was common law versus commercial law. Seven, we had more federal glue that we talked about. Eight was the lost rights. Nine was unanswered questions. And tonight is the conclusion and also the history of the 14th Amendment. From that point, we will talk about the allodial title of land and many other subjects as well. And then we will also get into the greatest story never told, which is a book written by a gentleman that got me on this road and on this path 2 decades ago. Anyways, so let's start with the conclusions. The idea that we've talked about may not be new to you. You may not believe them. You may like the federal system. You may like it the way it is. So if we've gone this far, I hope you'll see that the government in a different light. So let's restate the central premise of our purpose here. The government recognizes two distinct classes of citizens, a state citizen and a federal citizen. Each has different rights and responsibilities. State citizens created the states, who created the federal government, who created the federal citizens. Most people are born state citizens and become federal citizens without their knowledge sometime after birth. And it's great to know that you can reclaim your state citizenship status through a legal procedure, which we offer through the Monday night call, last night's call with GW. If you remain a federal citizen, you will continue to pay lots of money in taxes and you'll have zero rights, no rights, just privileges. If you reclaim your state citizenship status, you will have to learn about our legal system, and you'll have to change the way you bank and save and invest and other aspects of modern living that you probably have taken for granted. But a state citizen that knows the legal system has more control over his or her life. And if you don't know the legal system, You have what I refer to as the team here at YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com to assist you and teach you when you need to go. Information, ladies and gentlemen, is power. And for decades, this information, this power, has been centralized by the government class. And today, the balance of power is shifting. As citizens become more vigilant about government encroachment, the government's power is lessened. As the number of state citizens mushroom, you will hear about them in the press as the empire strikes back, if you would. This movement is not trying to change the system at all. This is the way it works. Simple. In fact, any attempt to change the Constitution by way of a constitutional convention or international treaty, we should all strongly be opposed to that. Can you imagine what sort of constitution would be written if our current political leaders did the writing? Heaven forbid. Might as well ask Karl Marx to weigh in on the matter. Can you imagine? So now that we have, so now you know what this movement is all about, whether you've decided to change your status or not is up to you. So that's the summary of our conclusion. So let's now talk about the history of the 14th Amendment. Prior to the alleged ratification of the 14th Amendment, there was no legal definition of a, quote, citizen of the United States, end quote. So prior to 1868, there was no such animal. Everyone had their primary citizenship in one of the several states. The Constitution referred to the sovereign state citizen and no one else. Those who went to Washington, D.C. or outside the several states were commonly referred to as citizens of the United States. In the Constitution for the United States, the term was used to identify state citizens who were eligible under the suffrage laws to hold office, and they were required under the Constitution to have primary allegiance to one of the several states. It's interesting to note, the first person that Abraham Lincoln called upon to correct the southern states and their misadventures and bad behavior, so it was postured. That first person was Robert E. Lee. And Robert E. Lee said, "I can't answer your question yet, Mr. President, because I don't know how Virginia is going to side, if it will side with the North or if it will side with the South. And until I know that answer, I can't give you your answer." Of course, history shows us that Virginia sided with the South, became one of the southern states that seceded from the Union, and hence that's why Robert E. Lee went and led, because he was a countryman first, and the country, as all Americans understood at that time, was not this impertinent federal government, but rather it was the state that was your nation state country that you lived in. With that having been understood, it's also nice to answer or point out Robert E. Lee never or had no slaves, at least at the time of the Civil War. He had no slaves. On the other hand, Ulysses S. Grant did. Anyways, let's see, where was I? Since the term was not specifically defined in the United States Constitution, Congress in 1868 took advantage of this term and utilized it in the so-called 14th Amendment to describe a new type of citizen whose primary allegiance was to the federal government, that is, Washington, D.C., and not to one of the several states of the Union, thus using the term as used in the United States Constitution to mislead and confuse the people as to the true intent and meaning of the Constitution. Many people have mistaken the citizen as denominated in the 14th Amendment to mean the same one in the original Constitution. This is an error. The citizen, quote, citizen of the United States, end quote, as used in the Constitution, was entirely written in lower case. The C was lower, the U in United was lower, the S in States was lower case. The entire expression was all written in lower case. So it was as used in the Constitution. It's not the same as the citizen of the United States, uppercase U, uppercase S, used in the 14th Amendment. So all the elected officials are not sitting in the office constitutionally. They're merely imposters created by the 14th Amendment. The current president is a U.S. citizen, therefore not the citizen of the United States defined in the Constitution for the United States. And neither the federal senators nor any congressmen are seated constitutionally. These facts being true, then all federal laws are invalid for want of constitutionality. The 14th Amendment creates and defines citizenship of the United States. It has long been contended and had been held by many learned authorities and has never been judicially decided to the contrary, that there was no such thing as a citizen of the United States except for becoming a citizen of some state. References United States versus Anthony, 1874 decision, found at 24 Fed, case 829. We have in our political system, and this is the Cruikshank, which you've heard from me hundreds of times by now. It says, quote, "We have in our political system a government of the United States, a government of each and of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has citizens of its own who owe it allegiance and whose rights within its jurisdiction it must protect. The same person may be at the same time a citizen of the United States and a citizen of a state, but his rights of citizenship under one of these governments will be different from those he has under the other." In other words, you do not have to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a state citizen. And this was held to be true by the Maryland Supreme Court in just 1966 in Cross versus Board of Supervisors of Elections, 221 A. 2nd, 431. It says, quote, "Both," and this is 1966, not long ago, "both before and after the 14th Amendment to the federal Constitution, it has not been necessary for a person to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a citizen of his state," end quote. The federal government was never given any authority to encroach upon the private affairs of the citizens of the several states of the Union, unless they were involved in import or export activity. Neither were they given authority to reach into the citizenships in Germany or France, living in Germany or France. In fact, the state could refuse to enforce any act of Congress that they felt was outside the intent of the granting of limited powers to the government. This is called interposition or nullification. Several state Supreme Courts have in the past refused to uphold federal laws within their states, as is their right. So this concludes the lessons for tonight on my part. We're going to go to PJ. Next week we're going to talk about allodial title upon the land. So with that, it's my pleasure to bring forward PJ, and let's hear what he's got to say tonight, and then we'll open it up for Q&A.
Well, thank you, Michael. You have a hard class to follow because you did such a superb presentation there. It's extremely interesting to understand the distinctions between a free man and a creation of the state. If you want to break it down to two worlds, you have the free man. You don't have to use the word free. You can just say man, because in the United States system, there is no man. It's only a legal entity, a legal fiction, a corporation. They're all the same. They're creations of the United States. If you're associated with the United States and interacting with the United States, you're being treated as a corporation. A corporation is simply a corpse. That's where the word comes from. A non-living man. Okay, so if you took a piece of paper and drew a line down it, and you had man on one side and the corpse on the other side, short for corporation, they will never intermingle, ever. The man will always be on one side, the corporations always on the other side. So either you're acting as a man at a given time and a given activity, or you're acting as a corporation. You can't be acting as both. And that's very important because the United States courts, they can only govern corps. So if you're going to be, if there's any evidence of governance on that side, it's always in a corporate status. And the only way you can have corporate status, corporate interaction with the United States, is that you did set or sign something to develop that relationship. It's not by birth. It's not by, the main thing is not by birth. Now, if you travel into their land, you're not a corporation, but you'll be treated like a corporation. So there is a slight distinction there. You're not a let's say you had to pass through the District of Columbia and you got stopped for jaywalking or whatever. You'll be treated as a corporate person just simply because you're on their land. You won't be treated as the same as a full-fledged corporate entity, but you'll be treated at least in part as a corporate person because you can present pleadings to the court that you're simply passing through. There's no evidence of residency there. There's no evidence of business interaction. There's no evidence that you're digging down any roots and, setting up shop there. So every time the United States reaches out and tries to govern you, may it be by property taxes, sales tax, fuel tax, every state and city, municipality, every single tax that is coming from an entity that's governed by the United States is laid upon under a corporate status. And so when you look at federal taxes, for example, they're not taxing a man. They're taxing a corporation. And same way with property tax and sales tax and so forth. Now, what we're talking about is getting a document from the United States that says that you did not say, sign, or do any act to become a corporation, that you are maintaining a status independent of the United States. And it appears to me like they are required to provide that document so that your rights are not violated. And if you don't have that document with you, it makes it much easier for them to violate your rights. But with a document, you can simply present. It's almost like when you're an ambassador in a foreign country and you're drinking in a bar and a bar fight breaks out and they come in to arrest everybody. You can hold your ambassador card up, and the chances are they are going to have an extremely high level of evidence against you to arrest you. Because you're an ambassador, you have special clearance there, and they can arrest you, if you outright do a felony, I believe, but anything else, they got to leave you alone. And, or at least they got to have an interaction jurisdiction with the country that you're from so that they can't just frame you and put you to death just because you're an American in Iran, for example. And the reason they do that because ambassadors are oftentimes considered a hostile enemy in that area because you might be at the brink of war. You might even be at war with that country at that given time. And you're there to try to make the best out of a bad situation perpetually. And that's kind of what a that's the way the United States. If you ever heard of Trading with the Enemy Act, and you're considered an enemy of the state, what they're actually referring to is that you're, if you're not with us, they almost consider that you're against them. It's kind of a weird way for them to look at it, but if you're not of their statism, that's indication that you're in opposition to their statism. And their statism has a grand goal to it. They announce it quite often, that that's how they want to govern life, through the bureaucratic and the mindset of socialism and a degree of communism, things like that. Whereas oftentimes man doesn't want anything to do with that. He just wants to be left alone, and ideally he wants to be left alone where he can obey God to the fullest. So what we're encountering here is a document that you carry with you as a type of diplomatic immunity. Now, you can take that document and abuse it, and you're going to get yourself in a world of trouble. But we're going to try to coach people not to do that, and but take full advantage of that that separation. And fortunately, when you're traveling about, for example, that as long as you do not do any man harm and do not violate any man's rights, for example, you're driving 120 mile an hour in Montana, where there, you haven't seen a car for the last 20 minutes of driving, and they pull you over and try to give you a ticket, they have to prosecute you under common law. They have to convince a jury of 12 people that live in that area, which a lot of people that live in that area love to drive 120 miles an hour on that road, and they completely understand, because it's a cities are far apart, there's no traffic, and you just as well put the metal to the pedal to the metal and enjoy the trip. And they do it all the time safely, so they cannot come against you statutorily. They got to convince a jury of 12, a majority of a jury of 12, that you actually harmed somebody or violated somebody's rights. So it makes it much, much harder for them to extract money from you, because they have to convince a jury. And I think it was one of the founding fathers said that the protection of the American people is not the Congress. It's not any legislative body. It's not your governor. It's not your president or a president. It's the jury of 12. It's your neighbor. He's your protection. Try to develop good neighbors, because they are the protection of the community. And that's a wonderful thing if that community is biblically grounded and following God's word, because you'll have tremendous peace in an environment like that. Michael, you got any questions on that? If you're still there.
I'm still here. So, I'm just on mute. Now hold on a second.
Okay.
Continue. I'll be right back.
Okay, I'll keep talking. So as we go down this new road, in many ways for many people, but it's not a new philosophy, but it's a new road for many people. That it's a paradigm shift, and there's a growing learning curve for all of us. And the statism people are going to be fighting it in many ways, but what we're finding out that the statism-minded people actually look at it and they examine it and they go, wow, that's pretty neat. You mean I don't have to pay property taxes, because I homeschool and I don't like to pay taxes that mostly go to the public school, and then I homeschool my kids. And you mean I don't have to give a third of my money to the federal government, or a fourth of my money to the federal government, whatever? During the Carter administration, it was 85% of their money, or not. I think it was just crazy. It's, those guys are insane at times, at all times, actually. You mean I don't have to support an industry that has killed 80 million babies? Wow, that would be, I would love to do that. I'd like to do everything I can to shut down the slaughter of God's creation in the womb. But anyway, opens up a tremendous opportunity. With these documents, we can establish communities that have a tremendous amount of understanding in the free inhabitant type lifestyle, being a patriot and loving the country as God desires us to, and hating the things that God desires us to. I think it's exciting. Montana, for example, you know, a lot of people go to Montana to try to get away from statism. And with this document, people can actually build their own communities. They can have interaction with people in the area that have done the same thing, and I think it'll build upon itself. For example, you know, I before I retired, I was making $15,000 to $25,000 a month, and I go right into federal court and tell them, and I said, you know, go ahead and tax me, send me an assessment, and if you think I owe a tax, if you think I have an obligation to file or pay, send me the law requires for you to do this, and I have the opportunity to present that to legal counsel and examine it and challenge it if it applies to me, and you guys have to produce the proof associated with that. And they just backed off. And it was incredibly easy. But I learned that the most important thing I could do in that time is to keep my mouth shut and let the paperwork do the challenge. What they want is somebody to get in there and talk like they know it all and make all these statements. And once you make a whole bunch of statements, you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff to try to convince a jury of. But if you don't make any statements, you keep the burden of proof on them, then they got to produce the evidence to support their claim. They'll claim, oh, everybody has to file federal taxes. Oh, yeah? Okay. Put your witnesses in the witness stand and we'll see what they have to say. And guess what? They won't have witnesses to put in the witness stand unless they're prosecuting a corporation. The corporation can be your neighbor or it can be a large corporation like Chevrolet or Ford, or there's thousands of them out there. McDonald's, Burger King, those are the under corporate status. So anyway, they have to come after you, and they have to. The simple way to look at it is: where in the Constitution are you allowed to require that I file a 1040 tax form or pay any monies over to the United States as a man? Just very simple. We got about 20 questions like that that we make sure that we present them during IRS prosecutions. And in the last 30 years, only one person has been prosecuted, and he actually sent in our paperwork to the IRS every year, but he paid taxes at the same time, and we don't recommend that. We recommend send the papers in and then let them tell you how much tax to pay. But we think we're going to win his case anyway. But it's a real battle. The guy's facing like 10, 15 years in jail. But anyway, if we prevail in that, we'll certainly be sharing that with everybody on this forum. Go ahead, Michael, if you're back.
I am back. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I had to take care of another conference call, another phone line. So, ladies and gentlemen, press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center of your monitor. You'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. All you need to do is just click, left-click into that rectangle and type away your comment or question, and then we'll be happy to have PJ answer for you. So that's it. Press star 2 on your keypad. Hello, Jennifer. Get with you in 1 second. This is a reminder to everyone. No new students will be taken on unless you have corrected your status. That is the key. In fact, I think it's safe to say that for nearly 30 years, I have witnessed fight after fight after fight, talking around, arguing around what we've all known to be what we're talking about here with regards to the product of citizenship status, but we didn't know how that we could take the proactive steps to correct our own status. And once that's done, the government has no room to move. They've got none. They either have to become tyrannical, which they can. Remember, after the Civil War, many states were only allowed to come into the Union if they would sign something, which was signed here in Florida. The entry back into the Union was at the point of a bayonet. So even that's void for threat and coercion. So anyways, we'll start with Jennifer. Let's go there.
Oh, wow.
All right, go ahead, yeah. There you go.
Others, but anyway, thank you. Hi, PJ. Is it okay?
Hello.
To ask what the process is going to be for my speeding tickets and how long it might take?
Okay.
Who knows? Sometimes they dismiss them right up front, but sometimes it's a long process. But go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Jennifer, you got the bill of particulars today I sent?
No, not yet. But when did you send it? I was out a lot of the day.
5-6 hours ago.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I sent you the first work that you got was actually somebody else's work that PJ had assisted with, and what I asked you to do was to simply make whatever changes and corrections were obvious to you. For instance, if you see John Doe, you're not John Doe. You might be Jane Doe, but you're not John Doe. So in other words, you just go in there and make all the changes that were applicable. And then there was a request from PJ with regards to color coding to use that. And then when you're done with it, you were to get it back to me and PJ. And PJ would then turn around and create a document for you from that. And then you would review it again and see if you were happy and understood what you were looking at and would go from there. But I sent that about 6 hours ago.
Okay. Well, I went out at 3 o'clock and I just got home for this call. So I haven't looked yet,
okay.
But I'll look.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Relationship to this, the status thing is a perfect example. You get a traffic ticket for speeding, let's say. And, now, if you're going 100 miles an hour and you're going right through a parade in town, you got a problem. But if you're going a few miles over the speed limit, what they call the speed limit, and you're not a corporate entity, they have to prosecute you under common law, and they got to convince a jury of your activity. And usually, when a community is being harassed by the local highway robbers, highwaymen. Is that what they used to call them when they sat on the road and robbed people?
Yeah.
Highwaymen or
highwaymen.
Something?
I think. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Crooks, criminals. A lot of times the communities get sick and tired of it really quick because their neighbors come in from out of state and they get pulled over and they're just out there laying for people to steal some money from. But anyway, it's a perfect example of evidence that they cannot prosecute you statutorily for that activity. You have a right to travel. You have a right to pass through. You have a right to mobility. The Bill of Rights says it. And they have to prove that you've interacted somehow to waive those rights. They have a terrible time doing that. Now, if you did have the document of status correction, it would make it certainly easier. Now, this document I did send you, it's going to touch on that and give them notice of your status, or at least notice of them having to produce evidence that your status is contrary to what you're saying. So it'll be pretty exciting. I've done it before and had the tickets dismissed immediately. And I went in to get a copy of the dismissal, and the entire case disappeared. So there's something in those things that they don't want on the record.
You can answer something for me, PJ, in relation to this, is that until there's an arraignment where, you know, how do you plead? First appearance.
Right.
How do you get something in front of the judge, in front of the prosecutor, before that happens? In other words, you have your bill of particulars. You have, I suspect that you're going to encourage Jennifer to also include as a separate filing her affidavit of status, the one that's already been forwarded or is being forwarded to the State Department of the United States. There's no reason that another original cannot be used just for her to put that in the record along with your bill of particulars.
Yes, you can do it immediately after you get the citation. And even if you don't get a case number, you can still file it under the citation number, and you send a copy to the court clerk. And it basically lets them – you're giving them a heads up, and it's a type of a jurisdictional challenge. They have to produce evidence that what they're bringing against you is the written law that they're bringing against you applies to you as a man. It applies to the activity that you've been charged with doing, and it applies in the land where they claim the activity occurred. Those three things, those three elements must be present for the U.S. court to proceed with a prosecution, and also the prosecutor to proceed with the prosecution. Now, those three elements have to be sworn to prior to the prosecution. They must be sworn to. Otherwise, the sufficiency of the pleadings is not before the court. Now, the prosecutor is part of the court, so it has to be before him before he can prosecute the case and bring it before a United States administrator. It has to have the elements of those three things sworn to. Now, they will fight it, especially territorial jurisdiction. They will fight it big time because they lack territorial jurisdiction in a big way in America. Like 25% of the American land is a land space where the written law of all these federal written laws and the state written laws apply. And the rest of the land does not apply. I had a friend in court just recently last week, and the judge said that the guy's name was Dale. He said, "Dale, if this is true, we don't have authority to prosecute most of what we're doing here." And then he says, "Is there any evidence that it's not true?" You know, where in the Constitution is my right to mobility? I have a case, driving under suspended driver's license. Where in the Constitution is my right to mobility to be denied at that location? And they just get this deer in the headlights look, like, where in the Constitution for me to carry a gun is denied? The right to bear arms, just go down the Bill of Rights. Now, the Bill of Rights, it also says that all our rights are not listed there. So, whatever they're charging you with, where in the Constitution am I denied, blah, blah, blah. And you're not making a statement. You're asking a question. Now, they cannot move against you unless it's in the it's in the Constitution. The Constitution is their charter. It is their limitation. If they can't fight it in the Constitution, they can't do it. It's a limiting document. It's not expansive. It's not a living document. It's limited. Go ahead, somebody.
So does that mean I should send in my that with the paper he gave me, like straight away before anything else, before I even look at your email thing? Or should I wait and do it all together?
What paper he gave you?
Yet?
Pardon?
You have a citation, right?
Well, I don't know what it's called, but he gave me two pieces of paper when I was, you know, and said I'd have to show it in court, and this is the day, and this is the time, and this is...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I sent you a copy of it.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, you immediately, as soon as you get that document, that day you can start sending documents before them. And letting them know what they're going to have to prove to come against you, that you're bringing these challenges upon them. The Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, says that you cannot be arrested without oath or affirmation. So now they'll claim that if you don't show up in court, they're going to arrest you. Okay, Fourth Amendment, you cannot be arrested without oath or affirmation. So I had a case once where they arrested me five times, and each time I went in and just got released on my own recognizance, except for the last time. The last time I decided to, because they were not going to release me again, I was letting it build up intentionally. And they said, PJ, we can't let you out because this is the fourth time you've failed to appear in court. And I said, judicial notice on the Fourth Amendment. And the administrator, the judge, kept talking over me, and I said it four times. And the fourth time I said it, judicial notice on the Fourth Amendment now, as enumerated in the Constitution for the United States of America. And that judge put his head down, like he was taking medicine that he hated to take as a child. And he said, I'll take judicial notice, PJ. Take him away. They stood me out in the hallway, and the case was dismissed in about 10 minutes, five or 10 minutes. The sheriff told me, he says, I don't know what in the heck happened in there. Your case is dismissed. But go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Jennifer, my morning and early afternoon is I'm booked. I can't do anything. But tomorrow, late afternoon, give me a call, and hopefully I'll be in front of my computer by 4 or 5 o'clock, and I'll open up your the citation that you had sent that we forwarded to PJ, and I'll assist you in building a court style to create the first admission of your affidavit into the record, and getting it populated to the clerk of court, to the prosecutor's office, and so forth, and directly to the judge. Find out who the judge is that handles traffic court. You need to, if you find tomorrow morning, here's your homework, if you would, find out which judges in your venue handle traffic court, get a list of them, and get their contacts, their post location and stuff like that.
You're not allowed to send it straight to the judges. You can get in trouble for that.
Let's get in trouble.
Yeah, but it's true, Michael. The process of correcting your status or correcting the record that they have on your status certainly could come into play here. It would be a good time to do that. Go ahead.
Well, this is what I would do where I'm similarly situated, and I would get it directly. I would get it to the clerk of court. I'd get it to the prosecutor's office, and I'd get it to the judge's office as well. And then if they want to slap my hand, I'll say, hey, look, I am not learned in the law. I'm not an attorney. If I made a mistake, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. All right, sorry. you know, just.
And it would be a good it would be a good opportunity to get notice to every single judge there. Now, it's not going to be legal notice. It's just going to be courtesy notice. Legal notice has to occur during the court proceeding. And if you do get proper legal notice during the court proceeding, it's very likely. I've had at least four prosecutors resign from their job by having this evidence put on the record before the court. Because they could not continue with their job anymore because they've been judicially noticed on the, for example, right to travel. Once they've been judicially noticed on the right to travel, they can't issue warrants for right to travel issues anymore without all the elements being sworn to. And they got to resign from their job because if they continue, they can lose their house and their life savings. They don't want to do that. So go ahead, somebody.
We're not there yet, but one of the things that I hope to accomplish, we've got about 25 people right now that have already are in the process of correcting their status. So we're launched. When I have 100 plus who have completed the process, then there will be a general email that will go out to everyone. That has corrected their status, and they will be asked, first question that I'm going to ask them is, would you consider gifting some of your time to participate in the formation of a grand jury, in the formation of a petit jury, in the formation of participating with trials in the American common law? See, you have a unique status. Anyone on this call, once your status has been corrected, not changed, corrected. There's a difference. If you talk about changing your status, what you're confessing without saying so, silently noticing, is that, well, it was right before, but now it's not right, so we're going to change it. No, that's not what we're doing. We're correcting your status. You're correcting your status. And what that says is you got it wrong to begin with, buddy. This is going back to the beginning. You got it wrong. So we need to undo anything that was done in the past. Did I have a trial by jury when I was charged with having a half a pound of cocaine in the trunk of my car? Was it a jury of my peers? The answer is no, it was not a jury of my peers. It was federal citizens that adjudicated the matter, not citizens of the freely associated compact states. I gotta learn the other phrase soon, start replacing it. But it's still the same thing for purposes of this discussion. And once we can do this, there's a lot that we can do. For instance, there's a phrase, deprivation of rights under color of law. You say that aloud in the courtroom, and in civil matters, they're going to say it's Title 42, Section 1983. In federal, in the criminal case, that's civil. In criminal cases, they're going to say, oh, that's Title 18, Section 42. But in common law, there's no numbers, anything attached to it. It's just deprivation of rights under color of law. And we can hold a trial, invite the defendants who, you know, a grand jury has indicted for depriving of your rights. And whether they participate or not, they can either be participate in with their presence, or they can be tried in absentia, whichever. We don't care. But when there's a guilty verdict, if there's a guilty verdict or if there's an innocent verdict, don't we have the right to enter a foreign judgment into the United States courts? So that's where we're going to go with this. We're going to turn this into a mighty thing. It's going to take a little time, but I don't hope it's not going to take that long a time.
Yeah, one way to look at it is that, yeah, real quick here, the United States was created to serve man. Okay, always remember that. The United States was created to serve man. Man has a right that the records that they have for man, Jennifer, is correct. You have a right to have your record in their possession to be correct. You have that right. They cannot deny you of that right. It's a felony for them to continue to maintain
a false record. We have evidence of that. It's a felony. If they know that a record is false, it's a felony for them to continue to not change it, not correct it. So it gets very interesting, because if you're in their system as a U.S. citizen, you can go to federal prison for doing certain activities by the process of a U.S. court. If you're not in their system, they can't send you to federal prison, which is it's an impossibility. They can only prosecute you in the American common law process. Now, they can put you in jail, they can fine you, they can put you to death, but the United States can't. Okay, go ahead, Jennifer.
So it's called, they say it's a supporting deposition notice to support simplified traffic information. It's a criminal act, apparently, local criminal court. That's
yes.
What the title says.
It's a U.S. It's the main thing is it's a, if it's a U.S. court. If it doesn't make if it's civil or criminal. If it's a U.S.
So
court,
I don't,
you know what?
I don't have to say yes or no or sign it when I send it back with the status letter.
Well, wait till you get the document. It notifies all them. It notifies them that you're not doing anything to enter into their jurisdiction.
Now, one thing I've just done is Alan B. Has joined the call, has been on the call since we started an hour ago, and Alan B. Was the lead investigator for the late Tony Davis, which PJ has replaced. And so I'm very interested in having Alan B. chime in with this. So I've unmuted your line, Alan, and what do you want to add to this conversation?
But the only thing I'd have to add to the conversation would, before you issue any documents saying what type of citizen you are, I would recommend issuing what they call a QUO warrantal. It's a document that you send to the judge and to the prosecuting attorney asking for their credentials for them to have authority to make a decision on the court bench, because
okay.
The majority of them, of the judges and the prosecuting attorneys, DAs, do not have these documents on file. A judge must have 4 different documents. A DA must have 3 different documents. And
do you have templates on this, Alan?
Yes, I do. We've got several cases that got totally bounced out of court because there was no documents. The clerk of court is supposed to have these on file for every judge in their jurisdiction and the DA. And we found out that 98% of them, because either they're appointed or elected, do not bother having any of these documents furnished or signed and delivered to the clerk of courts to be on record. That gives them the authority to invoke the authority of the court. So it's just a suggestion.
No, it's good.
We've done it better than 30 different cases. And you get the judge pissed off and you get the DA pissed off. But if they're unable to file or provide these documents before the case comes up, they have got to dismiss it because they have no authority to sit on the bench.
Okay. Jennifer, tomorrow when you call me late afternoon, remind me to try to get Alan on the phone and see if we can't do something there as well.
Thank you very much, Alan and Michael and PJ.
But you got to be careful. You got to be careful that in some of those situations, only a U.S. person can make those challenges. But we'll have some high-level people look at that before we do anything. which is fine.
Sure. Yep. Well, okay. if there's no other conversation, then I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Is there any other comments? Let me check Freedom's Radio just to make sure. Refresh. Nope, nobody there that has raised their hand. Jennifer, anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
Alan, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, that's about the only thing. Just a little information to help people along. I try to help everybody I possibly can, and it's been what we've been doing has been very successful. And you get the judges and the DAs pissed off at you, which I really don't care. And with a little bit of information that might be very helpful in the long run. But that's about all I got to say.
Your...
I thank you for your airtime.
Yeah, it's an excellent tool to add because, like I said, I had four head prosecutors, one federal prosecutor, three district or county prosecutors, and one other. And two assistant prosecutors resigned from their job when I brought this stuff up. And bringing up your material is just another level of showing their want for complete the sufficiency of the court.
Well, they want to have authority where they have no authority. That's the whole deal. In a nutshell.
Right.
Anybody
that goes into U.S. court knows it's a scam. You can see it play out right in front of you. It's highway robbery. Go ahead.
Okay. Michael has
on Supreme Court and twice. And they come up with the declaration that it does not infraction does not apply to the statute. Now, if you can explain that to me in plain English, I would greatly appreciate it. But that's what these clowns try coming up with, to confuse the average, ordinary person. And it's just mainly a big bluff is what the federal government is doing, and the states try to follow suit. But if you know what you're doing and you file right paperwork, I found out you can back them in a corner and you'll turn out and run or resign, like you said. So, anyway,
sure.
Thanks anyway.
Sure.
Thank
okay,
Michael
go ahead, Michael.
Has, Michael in Las Vegas, Nevada, has been unmuted, and I also unmuted Brent. Michael, you go first and then let Brent finish up, and then we'll go home.
Okay, thank you. One question is, do they, these judges and prosecutors, they're supposed to be members of the bar, and are they supposed to have a current foreign agent registration form filled out?
We can get into all that. You just do it. You don't want to bring it all in at once. You just bring it in one at a time. And it appears to me like they're required to do that because, see, they're bringing their jurisdiction, their legislative jurisdiction, into the common law jurisdiction. And I believe it's required.
Right.
Brent?
Okay, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
Alan, you got some background noise there.
No,
it's not me.
Okay.
It's not here. This is perfectly quiet here. It better be.
Nothing here in PG.
All right.
Why don't you put on these motherfuckers? I even got a piece
of
fucking lemon.
Just start muting everybody.
Okay. Brent's phone. Nope. I guess it was Michael's phone. Okay. Anyways, Brent, did you want to contribute anything else before we go?
Well, I don't have much to contribute, but I would like to ask PJ to elaborate on what he was saying before about the Fourth Amendment and the judges have to have something. Or could you explain what all that means?
Yeah, the Fourth Amendment says that no warrant can issue except by oath or affirmation. Now a warrant is includes several things. It includes the arrest, prosecution, being held over for trial, all that. Okay, they have to warrant their activity. Okay, they have to warrant. Another synonym for warrant is justification. They have to justify the arrest. They have to justify the prosecution. They have to justify the laying you over and holding you for trial. Now, they can lay you over and hold you for trial by simply saying you can leave on your own recognizance, but if you don't show up at trial on the 12th of next month, you're going to be arrested. So that invokes the Fourth Amendment there, that whole process. If they're having a bracelet on your ankle, the Fourth Amendment is acting. All those activities, they have to have a sworn statement by an individual that is swearing to the elements of the crime: person, activity, location. That's the three elements of the crime: person, activity, location. They have to swear to that to somebody that is authorized in the United States system to receive sworn statements. You can't just go swear it to their grandmother or their brother or their dog. You know, they can't. They've got to go and swear it to a person that's authorized to receive a sworn statement. And then both of those people are required to sign that document. The person making the statement and the person receiving the sworn statement. And the person making the statement is doing that in his own personal commercial liability. He cannot make a sworn statement as a police officer or an employee of the federal government. He has to do it in his own personal commercial liability. And that's where the rub comes in. They don't want to do it unless they've got plenty of evidence that is true. Now, we were bringing I had an issue of challenging a municipality on bringing municipal codes, and they were arresting me for it. And I put a challenge together, and they went away and dismissed the case. And one of the judges contacted me and said that PJ, you're absolutely right. They're required to get a sworn statement for all prosecutions. They said the judge said, we used to do it, but now we only do it on felonies. But you're absolutely right. It's required for all prosecutions. And that's the reason the majority of those people resigned from their job, is because they were issuing warrants daily without a sworn statement.
And that sworn statement has to come from somebody. That sworn statement has to come from somebody who's a witness to the crime.
Yep.
More or less.
Yeah. Just think of an example. You have a car. You run into my car in the parking lot of Walmart, and a cop shows up and writes me a ticket. Officer, how can you make a sworn statement of this incident? You didn't witness anything. Put them in a tremendous bind. They can't issue those citations, and they do it all across the country. They issue citations for activities that they didn't even see, and they're not allowed to do that pursuant to the Fourth Amendment, the Bill of Rights. So they might be able to do it administratively to a corporate entity, but not to the man of right. So does that help answer your questions? So basically what it's saying is that if you're protected as a man of right, it's a whole lot harder for them to prosecute you.
Yeah, that was very helpful, PJ. Thank you.
A corporate entity. Okay,
All right.
Okay, Michael, close her up.
Yep. Thank you all so very, very much for joining us. I want to remind everybody on the call, please, if you're interested in what we talked about tonight, then you really must be there Monday nights next week. Same phone number, same PIN, same time. And we'll be presenting with GW about how you actually can go about correcting your status. Also, as a reminder for many on the call, that we have Judge Bernie Saturday, same phone number, same PIN, and it's how to put yourself in a place where you become, in the Vulgate, judgment proof. In other words, you own nothing but control everything, and if you don't own it, it can't be taken from you. So until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.